Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
We're here on the Intimacy and Relationships channel of the Embodiment Conference. And a reminder to those who are here with us, which is nearly 200 people, that we are in a webinar format, which means we see our speakers in the main room. However, you won't be able to unmute yourself or use your video. Betty, I do have a question. Would you like people to come into the main room with you so there's a little bit of interaction?
That would be great.
Okay, so if anyone would like to join us into the main room, this is a space so that it can become a little bit more interactive and Betty can see us. So you can just raise your hand with that small little electronic hand icon at the bottom of your screen. And Gabby will bring you in. So as you may have heard earlier, we are going to spend around 10 minutes dedicated to questions. So at the bottom, you see a Q&A section. So if any specific questions, just pop them in there. And we will have the privilege and honor of Dr. Betty Martin to answer them directly. So I'm so pleased to introduce to you Dr. Betty Martin. I will stop saying your full name shortly. It's part of it. So she is a chiropractor, a body electric school trained sacred intimate, a certified sexological body worker, foundations of facilitation trainer, and self-propelled erotic adventurer and intimacy coach. And these days, her passion is training other hands-on practitioners in consent skills and how to teach their clients embodied and empowered choice, so they can stop doing what they think they are supposed to do and start doing what it is that they want to do. Today, we are talking about the wheel of consent. So it is more than permission. The wheel shows you who is giving, who is receiving, when to be generous and when to be selfish, and how to know the difference. And without further ado, I'll open the space up to you. What an honor and a privilege to be here. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting people into the room. It's much more interesting talking to people than it is talking to some screen. So thank you for showing up. I enjoyed the sponsorship intro because the other day I was on a panel with Ilan, the boundaries panel. And so I got to know her a little bit. That was really fun. Yeah, I think that's posted. You can go see it if you want. The wheel of consent, what the heck is it? Can you raise your hand if you're already familiar with it or if you've used it or studied it or anything else? Okay, great. So about half of you. Terrific. So have you ever... You're messing around with your sweetie or a cuddle buddy and your hand is maybe moving down their back and you're not sure if they like it or they don't like it, or you're not sure if it's for them or if you're doing it for you and it's a little confusing. Anybody ever been there? How about if someone's hand is moving down your back and you're thinking, well, I don't mind this. It's all kind of okay. I guess they want to do it. Anybody been there? Yeah. Or maybe you, maybe it's what, it's really fabulous and you want more of it. Anybody been there? Yeah. The wheel of consent. So what are you going to do? Let me start back up a little bit. So suppose you, someone's hand is moving down your back and you decide that it's okay, you don't mind, but you maybe like it a little different. And then what do you do? Hopefully, of course, we ask for a change, but everybody been in the situation where you can't quite get the words out? Yeah. Yeah. So the wheel of consent is a model and a practice. Let's see, I know there's chat happening, but I'm going to studiously avoid it and we'll come back to it later so I don't confuse myself. The wheel of consent is both a model and a practice. It's a model that describes the difference between who is doing and who it's for. So a moment ago, I was explaining that my hand is running down your back. Is it for you or is it for me? And how do you know? And what difference does it make anyway? Sometimes it might not make a difference, but sometimes it makes quite a bit of difference. Because if it's for you, then you get to ask me to change it. If it's for me, then it really may not matter too much whether it's enjoyable to you, because you're just letting me do what I want to do. So the wheel of consent makes that distinction. So that's the model side of it. And there's a diagram with two axes, which you can see online. That's the model part of it. But I think what's actually more interesting is the practice part of it. The practice part of it means that, and when I say practice, I don't mean practice so that you get better, like shooting basketball.
Arthur? Is that you, Arthur? No. Oh, okay. Just check. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I mean a practice meaning something that you come back to over time, because it's an opportunity to pay attention to your experience. So it's like a yoga practice or a meditation practice or a running practice or a cooking practice or something where you are coming back to it again and again over time, because each time you come back to it, you get to notice something new about yourself. And that's where the wheel of consent really shines. The noticing yourself, the coming back to it, the ahas that arise because of it. So the wheel of consent is basically based on two questions. May I and will you? And when you pause a moment, you notice that there's quite a bit of difference between those two questions. If I ask you, may I play with your hair? May I run my hand down your back? May I spank you? May I nibble on your ear? May I hug you? May I climb on your lap? May I? It means there's something that I want to do. And because it's something that I want to do, and if it involves you, then I need your permission. So that's one question, may I? And the may I question creates a particular dynamic, which is I'm doing what I want and you don't mind and it's okay with you, and you're giving me this gift of allowing me to do what I want to do. And that is it's a significant gift. What you're giving me is your body, essentially, or more accurately, you're giving me access to a part of your body in a particular way for a particular period of time. And you, of course, do get to have your boundaries and limits. Of course you do. So that's one dynamic. May I? The other dynamic is, will you? Will you scratch my back? Will you run your hand through my hair? Will you get me a cup of tea? Will you spank me? Will you bite my neck? Will you hold me? Will you listen to me cry and vent about my day? When I say will you, I'm asking you to take action for me. So permission doesn't really fit in that dynamic. But when I'm asking you to do something for me, if you agree to it, and again, of course, you get to have your boundaries and limits. When you agree to it and then do the thing, then we have a very different dynamic. Is this making sense? The difference between may I and will you? And the difference between may I and will you is really the essence of the wheel of consent. And noticing that there's two different dynamics at play. So when I say, for example, as we used the example before, may I run my hand down your back? It's for me. I'm doing it because it feels good to my hand, and I like that curve in your hip right there, and I like maybe the feel of your skin or the feel of your sweater. And I'm attending to what feels good to me. And I'm also attending to whatever limit you have set. If you said yes, but don't go below my waist, then it's up to me to be attentive that not go below your waist. So that's the one dynamic. And the other is, will you run your hand down my back? And now I'm doing it for you. So I'm doing it the way you want. Well, I can only do it the way you want if I ask you what it is that you want and how you like it. So if you say, will you run your hand down my back? I'll say, sure. Would you like it slow, soft, harder, deeper, faster? What would be wonderful to you? And you're telling me, and I'm doing it as best I can. So that's the two dynamics. And sometimes people will ask, well, what if we both want it? Terrific. That's a bonus. What if I want to give you a back rub and you want to have a back rub? Isn't that a win-win? Yes, it is. It's great. However, there is some point at which my hand is moving down your back. My hand wants to go this way, but you want me to go this way. But which way is it going to be? There is some point at which my desire will be a little bit different than your desire. And at that point, it becomes important to know who it's for. Because if it's for me, and we've already agreed, I'm letting my hand go where I want to go because it's for me. If it's for you, I'm going exactly where you want me to go because it's for you. Why does this even matter? That's a really good question. In my experience, it matters because I have been in the position where somebody was doing something to me. It was lovely. And I didn't know if it was for me. If it was for me, it wasn't really quite what I wanted. But if it's for the other person, it really doesn't matter what I want. It just matters, am I okay with it? And I didn't know which it was. And I ended up going along with something that I thought somebody else wanted. And then later found out, because we talked about it, later found out that they thought they were doing what I wanted. Anybody been there? Yeah. Yeah. This is why it counts. This is why it matters. Yeah. The wheel of consent is also a practice in asking for what you want. Anybody notice that that can be hard to do? Yeah. Yeah. The will you and the may I are two different forms of asking for what you want. But that's no secret that it's often difficult to ask for what we want. So what I would like to do is play with this a little bit. And I think we can do this in the chat. And, or actually we could do it, let's do it with hands raised here and just speaking. You could also use the chat if you prefer. Why don't we ask for what we want? Why don't you ask for what you want? I can tell you one reason I don't ask for what I want, because I sometimes don't know what I want. Who else had a hand up? Yeah, Angela.
Feels super scary.
Feels scary. Yeah. Yeah. Kat?
No trust. The answer is no.
What's that?
In case the answer is no.
In case the answer is no. Yeah, you might get a no. Yeah.
What I will end up receiving is not actually what it is that I want.
Ah, right. And then you might not be able to correct it and tell them what you do.
That's what I have to settle for.
Uh-huh, yeah, 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 yeah. Patricia?
For me, what comes to mind is, oh, then he's going to want something that I'm going to have to give to him, and I'm not sure I know how to do that right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think I want them to already know what I want, but maybe that's not true. Maybe I'm just afraid to ask. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Who wishes that everyone, that not everyone, but in the right moment, someone could read your mind? Hell yeah. 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 Other reasons we don't ask for what we want.
I lose the capacity to speak. Like, I actually lose the ability to give words to things sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm scared I might be too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's take one or two more. I see, Allison, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are socialized to give and not to receive. So we feel like very unpracticed at asking for what we want, or we've been given messages that that's not okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And Cameron?
Sorry, space doesn't work. I was wondering, I actually have a problem with the second step. If I ask and it doesn't work out, I never know how to go to the, okay, let's talk about it.
Uh-huh.
So if it happens repeatedly, especially you make a request or you say no to something and it repeats and repeats, I stumble at the, okay, we have to talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So given if when I do this in person, we're writing it on the wall, and pretty soon we have this whole list of reasons why we don't ask. And given all those reasons, what do we do instead? What do you do instead of asking? You hope that they read your mind? What else? Is that Evelyn?
We maneuver our body to try and get into the place of possibly where it possibly oh. be okay. And you know, yes. like arch our back or do something and try to kind of, you know, or change the action because it's not happening.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. What else? We hint. Oh, gee, such and such would sure be nice, wouldn't it? Anybody ever done that? Yeah. Yeah.
Or we freeze and we get resentful.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Resentful. I've been a queen of that one. Yeah. Yeah. Hannah?
You do it for them in hopes that they'll do it back.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good one. What
move
else?
On to the next see? Relationship.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Oh, yes, exactly. Exactly. How about manipulating? It's kind of someone brought up the example of actually manipulating the shape of your body and your body position to kind of create a hint or make it happen. But how about manipulating in a broader sense of trying to get someone to want what you have been afraid to ask for? Anybody ever done that? Yeah. Other things we do when we don't ask for what we want.
You can play the victim role.
Oh, yes. That one's really fun. Yeah. Yeah. And you get to blame the other person for not reading your mind. Yeah. Anybody ever done that? Yeah. So given this...
Blaming myself that I can't send the thoughts correctly.
Oh, yes, yes. It's not that they can't read your mind, it's that you're not beaming them. Beaming your mind hard enough. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah.
There was a good one in the chat from Priyanka about uh-huh. talking about compatibility. Uh-huh. Stop doubting your compatibility.
Ah, yeah, right. Because if they can't read your mind, you must not be compatible. Yeah, that's great. Any other ones from the chat?
Suffer in silence.
Oh, yes. That's a good one, too. Yeah.
Or make these like weird noises that are not even words, but you're just trying to get them to do the thing that you want to do with like some kind of alternative language that you've created.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Evelyn.
But sometimes we also don't know what we want.
Yes.
Because we haven't explored ourselves.
That's right.
So we don't know what we like. And so how can we ask what we don't know about?
Yes. That's a great question, which we're going to come right back to. And Tiffany?
Just try to convince yourself that you actually don't want it, so you don't.
Yes. Yeah. I'm seeing lots of smiles and nods and twinkles. It sounds like all of these different things that we do, we're familiar with. Yeah. And I think if you look at this list of why we don't ask, it's largely fear, isn't it? Different kinds and different combinations of it, but and we don't know, as somebody said. If you look at that list of why it's so hard, and then you look at this other list of what we do instead, can you have a little compassion for what we do instead by remembering how hard it is? Compassion for ourselves, compassion for the other. Yeah. So the wheel of consent is, as a practice, is a practice in asking for what you want. And the kind of magic or miracle of it is that because it starts with such a small, simple thing, it not only makes it easier, but it also kind of in a way makes it more difficult because so you can start the 3-minute game by asking the may I and will you questions. You can also start it by asking what the other person wants. So for example, you would say, how would you like me to touch you for X number of minutes, 5 minutes, say. How would you like me to touch you for 5 minutes? Pause for a moment and imagine somebody asking you that question right now. And what do you notice comes up? Ah, I don't know, or you're supposed to know, or I don't care, or let's take a few hands. What do you notice comes up when you imagine someone asking you, how would you like me to touch you right now for 5 minutes?
I'm afraid to have that focus solely on myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because what happens when you have it?
I freeze. I block.
I'm sorry?
I freeze and I block it out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fear, essentially.
Fear.
Yeah. Yeah. What else do you notice when someone asks you that? Maybe it's joy and excitement and, oh yeah, it's about time. Yeah.
I probably default to let's go with the most socially acceptable instead of what I actually want.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And pretty common is I don't know what I want. And of course, we don't always know what we want because we haven't always been asked, and we haven't. And when we did ask for what we want, it didn't go well necessarily. So if you don't know what you want at any given moment, well, don't blame yourself. Like, of course, we don't always know. Of course, we don't always know. For lots of good reasons.
Is there something, sorry, Betty, is there something yes. about trusting the other person? When you, with the original question you asked about how do you feel about asking the other person mm-hmm. to do something or to, mm-hmm. you know, will you? Mm-hmm. There's something about trusting that person to be able to say no, which I guess is a self-projection of my own yeah. trust in myself. And also with the one of saying, if somebody says, how would you like, or what would you like me to do, or how would you like me to do something? There's something about trusting them to be able to say, so if I said, I don't know, I'd like you to massage my feet. And I think, oh, maybe they won't like massaging my feet, but they'll say yes because they right. feel they have to. Or there's something right. about trusting myself and trusting the other person that scares me a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. That add that to the list of why we don't ask for what we want. Yeah. Yeah. I forgot where I was. Oh, so asking, so having someone ask you how you would like to be touched right now and the feelings that it brings up. So in the practice of the Wheel of Consent, where you do ask each other, how would you like me to touch you for X number of minutes? Because all the other complexities are not in the room, then, or they're not in play because you're not having sex, you're not making love, you're not, it's, we have taken the, as a practice, we've taken all the other stuff out. So when I say practice, what I really recommend is that you set aside a time and agree, okay, let's play the 3-minute game. Let's practice the Wheel of Consent. Let's ask each other these two questions. it's an, when the, then your partner asks you, how would you like me to touch you for 5 minutes? Suddenly you notice there is no place to go. Yeah, there's no escape from the fact that it's now all about you for the next few minutes. And that can be really scary, as we've just seen. It also can be liberating because, oh my gosh, this person cares what I want. Holy cow, like that's amazing. And what you may not realize or give yourself time for is the fact that, oh, I can wait as long as I want to notice what it is that I want because it's my turn. And it may be an awkward few minutes, and it may feel like it's forever, but it's really only a few minutes usually. I once had it take 45 minutes. I was with a client. This was her third or fourth session in. She was in pretty good shape. She was there to enhance her erotic life. And I said, okay, we're going to practice you asking for what you want, because I'd noticed that this was a problem for her. And I said, climb up on the massage table, get comfortable however you want. You can sit. She was fully clothed. We both were. You can sit, lie down, stand up, whatever you want. So she laid down on the table, and I said, and I'll do whatever you ask me to do and nothing more. I'll just keep doing whatever you ask me to do. So she climbed up on the table and she lay there for 45 minutes. 45 minutes doing nothing. And I thought, oh, maybe I should ask her. Maybe I should do something. I said, no, I have agreed with her. I'm going to wait here for her, and I need to just shut up and wait. So I shut up and waited for 45 minutes. And then she said, please put your hands on my feet. So I went to the end of the table. I put my hands on her feet and stayed there for a few minutes. And then our time was up. And she got up. She sat up on the table in tears and she said, you have been telling me that I get to choose what happens to me, but I never knew it until now. And that was a big aha day for her. It was a big aha day for me. And it showed me the importance of having an experience in which you are absolutely in charge of what happens to you without question. And the only way that you can do that, that I have found anyway, or one of the best ways to do that, is to take the interaction out of the interplay dynamics of sex and everything else and just seriously take turns. So when it's your turn, it's completely your turn and you are in charge of exactly what happens. My hand goes where you want it and it moves when you want it and it stops when you want it. And that can be completely mind-blowing and liberating and enjoyable and challenging. Because as someone said, now I'm the center of attention. Now what do I do? You know. So part of what the Wheel of Consent is this practice of getting clear about who it's for. And you get clear about who it's for by saying, may I or will you? And then noticing what happens when it's completely for me. What feelings come up when it's completely for me? What is challenging about it being completely for me? What is liberating? What is joyful? What is sexy? What is whatever I discover when it's completely for me? And why is it completely for you? What have we done that makes it completely for you? We've made an agreement. I have said, how do you want to be touched? You said, will you scratch my back? And I said, yes. That's our agreement. And that says it's completely for you. Is this making sense so far? And so that's why I say in the practice of the Wheel of Consent that it's liberating, it's fun, it's joyous, it's also very challenging. It's also full of ahas. Tears can come up, hilarity can come up, sexual arousal can come up, lots of things can come up, which is one reason why it's so helpful to play it again and again and again, because it's going to be different every time. Let me look at the clock. So we've been, in our descriptions here, we've been describing what would happen if I asked you how you want me to touch you. I could also ask you the other question, how do you want to touch me? In which case, then you are in the position of, again, noticing what you want, but it's not how you want to be touched, it's how you want to touch. Maybe you want to feel my hair, or, you know, whatever. And so the same thing would play out as far as the embarrassment and the awkwardness of you getting the time to notice what you want and ask for it. So that's the Wheel of Consent. And I see your hand. I'll come back to it in just a moment. So in the intro, she said when to be selfish and when to be generous. And so I just want to answer that question. When it's your turn, you be selfish. And when it's their turn, you be generous. And the other thing that I want to say about the practice of the Wheel of Consent is that it's not something that you necessarily want to take into your whole life. I don't recommend it. I don't live my entire life based on one roll of the wheel or the other. But as a practice, just like any other practice, you become aware of things and you notice things about yourself and you gain skills. And then you carry those over into your life. And then you can see, oh, this affects this part of my life, or, oh, this applies to this other part of my life. So you don't have to analyze every interaction to see where it fits on the wheel. I don't recommend that. You'll drive yourself crazy. But what I do recommend is that as you practice it and you notice whatever you notice about yourself, then you will naturally take that noticing into other aspects of your life. Yeah, I think that's the quickest wrap up that I think I can give on the Wheel of Consent. There are free downloads on my website, which I'm assuming will be published on the thing here. And there's 7 hours of free video all about this. There's things you can download and print out, and so help yourself. Questions. And Maya, you had one. You want to start?
Yes.
And just a second. And Hannah, will you monitor the chats too for questions?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So if we can open the space up for Maya first, and then I can feed you the ones in the Q&A box.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was extremely rich and interesting. So we talked a lot about asking for what you want. The flip side, obviously, is boundaries, right? And yes. So that in the exchange and practice, you need to practice also saying no and accepting the other person saying no on things you want and being that being okay.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Thank you. We just didn't quite have time to go into that. But that's a crucial part of the experience. And so you're learning to ask for what you want. You're also learning how to say no, or how to negotiate, or how to say, yes, I can do this, but I can't do this part. Yeah, absolutely. Which is if we made a list of why we don't say no, it would look a lot like the list of why we don't ask. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there was also some questions about maybe modeling some answers of how to say no. How do we communicate that without offending or hurting the other person?
Wow, that's a great question. It depends on the situation. If we're standing in the kitchen and we're in a conversation and you ask me for something or some affection or some touch or some help, that's going to be one kind of no. And oftentimes we like to give a little explanation because it helps to maintain the connection. We're afraid that if we do say no, the person will leave or that we'll lose the connection. And so when we say no in conversation, we often want to say a little more in order to ensure the connection goes. So some examples might be, oh, wow, that sounds really fun, if it's true. That sounds really fun, but I'm not up for that today. Ask me later. Or, oh, I can see how that might appeal, but doesn't appeal to me. I'm sorry, I'm not available. Or it might be, I'm not interested in that, but this other thing that's kind of close interests me. Does that interest you? Or thank you for thinking of me. That was a very kind offer. I'm going to pass. Or no thanks. I appreciate you asking, but no thanks. Or a little to the left, please. Or I can do that for about 10 minutes, but I'm really tired. I don't think I could do it longer than that. Does that work for you? Those are kind of also examples of negotiating. When you are inside the container of the practice, however, I recommend that you just say no. Because it's an opportunity, because it's harder to do usually. And so it stretches, it develops the inner muscle of being able to say no. So I recommend just no. When you're standing in the kitchen or, you know, walking down the street or some other time, you can give more than, you can say more than the word no, and it's usually appreciated. Yeah. But no is a complete sentence. No more is required. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this is the distinction, right, of the practice versus the transference. So really ensuring that you create space for the practice.
Yes.
And this is creating the muscle.
Absolutely.
And building the muscle. There's another question about experiencing past sexual trauma that can make a person feel frozen or disassociate during new sexual encounters that trigger them. Can you recommend any good techniques to come back into the body during these times?
Yes, first of all, stop what you're doing. It's hard to describe that because it depends on the situation. It depends on who you're with, how fast things are moving, whether you have communicated about it before, whether your partner is attending to you and noticing that you are frozen, or whether they're just blasting on ahead. It really depends, but I think the question is, if I'm the one that's frozen, what can I do? And first of all, if it's possible at all to give a signal to stop, then do that. And breathing, taking a deep breath. There are people who teach this much more exquisitely than I do about breathing into your belly so that your nervous system can reset. And what very often helps is making eye contact with the other person and just staying there, so that you have the opportunity to notice that they are still in the room with you. They have not run away. they have not given up on you, that making eye contact to notice they're still in the room with you. And I'd encourage you to attend some of the other calls in this series that specifically address trauma. In the practice of the Wheel of Consent, how it's addressed is by slowing way the fuck down. I mean, slowing way down. I'm asking you how you want to be touched. And it may take a half an hour for us to just sit and wait and wait and wait until you notice that you are in charge. And you being in charge counters the experience of trauma when you were not in charge, because that's what the large part of what trauma is not being in charge. And so that counters that experience, and feelings will come up and you get to notice, oh, I am in charge. And how does this feel different? So
thank you for speaking into that. Yeah. There's another question about working with the Wheel of Consent and sexual trauma. Can you speak into that a little bit?
I'm not a trauma therapist. I'm a sex worker and a sex coach and a former chiropractor. And what I've noticed is that when we slow down and I ask people these two questions, how do you want me to touch you and how do you want to touch me? If I can slow people down enough, then they start to learn, because they have an embodied experience, they start to learn that, oh, I have a choice about how I am touched. Oh my God. And as we are as we have the opportunity to notice that we have a choice about how we are touched, the trauma of not having had the choice comes up and dissolves. So the Wheel of Consent is not the only tool in helping people with trauma, of course not, but it's useful in that it gives people an experience of what it is like to really be in charge. And that changes lives. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question here is about educating male partners about consent. So the question is from Palamalev. Should we have to educate our male partners about consent or assume that they should come pre-trained? If so, how do we educate others on what consent is? And what about cultural components?
I don't think anybody comes pre-trained. I sure didn't. And I don't know anybody else who did. So, I don't think anybody comes pre-trained. And I think it's also true that we want our partners to be pre-trained, because then we don't have to train them and we don't have to then ask for what we want. Or at least that's where I was guilty of. Like, I want you to know what I want. I don't want to have to ask. And it's also true, I think, or at least it's been in my experience, that if a potential partner does not show the skills of consent, we ain't going anywhere. It's like, I just don't want to deal with it. I train people with consent for a living. I'm not doing it on a date. Like, just, I ain't going to do it. That's just me personally. However, what if you're already in relationship and you're starting to learn about this and you want to keep the relationship because you care about the person and it has other fine qualities and you want to keep the relationship, then I think what is honest is to, again, ask for what you want, which may sound something like this. It may be something like, I've been learning about this thing called consent, and I really want to learn it. Are you interested in learning it, or will you learn it with me? And here's how I have in mind to learn it. I want to do this, now this 3-minute game, wheel of consent thing, or I want to go to this workshop, or I want to read this book together. Are you willing to do that? So it comes back once again to asking for what you want. Is it harder for men or women to learn consent? I don't know. I think our social conditioning, and I'm going to speak in binary terms here for a moment. I think our social conditioning varies by the person, also varies by what gender you were raised, to make some things harder and some things easier. And I think it's very often more difficult for people who have the privilege of getting what they want to notice that other people are giving up something. So this would be true for me as a white person. It's harder for me to notice that someone else may be giving up something for my benefit that I didn't even notice because my privilege did not require me to notice. And I think it's very commonly true for people who are raised as boys and men to assume that they have access to something that they might not actually have access to, but they're so used to it, they think they can just walk up and grab somebody or, you know. I think those are the general things that happen in our culture. But each person is different. I've worked with men who were very entitled. I've worked with men who were totally intimidated with, like, I can ask for anything, like, that's news, you know. And the same with women, and the same with non-binary folks.
Yeah, thank you. And in terms of, or for those who are asking of how often to practice, how often would you recommend to practice this?
Well, if it's fun, you're going to probably want to do it every day. Do it as often as you want, as you can. Neurologically, shorter, more frequent turns tend to make the most change. But if all you have is one Saturday every 3 months, then take it. I had a retired couple who spent 20 minutes every morning, one in each of the, like, one day it would be her asking, what do you want? And they would be him asking, what you want, you know. But, you know, if you can manage it once or twice a week or every couple of weeks for an hour or something, that's great. If it's really fun, you're going to want to do it every day, which is terrific.
Yeah, I think this speaks to a little bit into, there's a few questions which have a common thread about doing this practice, like killing the moment or ruining the vibe or the flow or the mystery. So, can you speak into that a little bit?
That's why it's a practice. You don't do it in the middle of your sex play. You set a separate time on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. We're going to do this thing. We're going to experiment with this game. And it's what helps in making a container of it is that you have a different set of agreements and expectations. If I come up to you in the kitchen and I start grabbing you and fondling you, I might be expecting that it's going to lead somewhere and it's going to go down A, B, C, and we're going to get to X, Y, Z. But in the container of a practice, we don't have that expectation because it's not going anywhere except exactly what I asked for and exactly what you asked for. So it creates a kind of safety that allows us to discover things that we will discover no other way. As far as, so that's why I put it in a practice. It is also possible to, you know, mix it up into your sexual play, asking someone how they want to be touched. I can't think of anything really more sexy than that. However, I realize that that's not always the case. Because if someone asks you how you want to be touched, for example, then you have to pause and notice, and then you're vulnerable, and you may not know, and then, you know, then the mystery. My question is, what is it that's actually mysterious here? Is it that you're wanting for everything to be magical and not have to communicate? That sometimes happens, sure. And if you're relying on that to happen every time, I would say it's time to grow up, because it doesn't happen every time. And you really do need to know what you want and what the other person wants, at least, you know, to some degree, to get started. And if what you're wanting, what you're calling mystery, that you're wanting more of, is not to have to communicate, then it's time to grow up.
Yeah. No, amazing. Thank you so much. If it's okay for everyone, we're going to run 5 minutes late. Yeah, I've got lots of thumbs up, so I think we're going to soak up the time with you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'll finish with one question, which is about, I guess, we responded with, you gave us examples of ways to say no. Maybe you can share examples of ways to say yes, or halfway yeses.
Mm-hmm. Halfway yeses, I'm thinking that means what I think of as negotiation, which would be something like, oh, hell yeah. Well, that would be a whole yes. Like, hell yeah, I'd be totally happy to do that for you. Hell yeah. Or it could be, oh, that sounds fun. I can do this part, but I can't do this part. I can do your back, but I'm not comfortable doing your butt. Or I'm totally happy to do that for 10 minutes, but I don't really have the energy to keep going after that. Does that work for you? And then check back. Does that work for you? Because it may be, they may be delighted to get 10 minutes, or it may be that actually, if I'm only going to 10 minutes, I'm going to ask for something different. So that's the conversation. A partly yes, maybe I would be happy to do that next Friday. Or I'd be happy to do that if I can turn and sit this way so that I can lean back. Does that work for you? I'm happy to do that if I can keep my shirt on. Does that work for you? Sure, you can do that. I'm going to keep my shirt on. Or yes, you can do that as long as I can get comfortable. I need to turn around this way first. Or yes, you can do that as long as it's not too deep, and I'll tell you if it is. Does that work for you? Those are some examples.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Betty, for being here and sharing your wisdom. And even though it was just a scratch on the surface of the work that you do, if any of it resonated with you, then please head over to her website, and there's a ton of free resources to dive a little deeper. And this is really powerful work. And yeah, really, thank you so much for the service. And yeah, as you can see, we are all resonating.
You're so welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. The next session is happening in an hour, and it's from pain to pleasure. converting blocked sexual energy. So if you want to stay on this channel, then this will be a deep dive with Justine Dawson. I'm just going to close the session about in a little bit, but I will come back to you with one last question to close.
Okay.
So I just have a few things to share with everyone in this space. So honoring your presence here and thanking everyone to be here. Of course, the Embodiment Conference at the moment is a huge event, and it's lots of free resources, and it's such an amazing opportunity. So, and you have the opportunity to own this all. So I'd really recommend that you buy it. It's a lot of content, so we can't digest this all in 10 days. So you can head over to your portal and upgrade your account. This kind of means that everyone can access this resource live and free, but it's also a thank you to the team and the amount of effort that it takes to pull everyone here together to get everyone to coordinated to share this wisdom. If you would like to continue the conversation or share your reflections, you can head over to our private Facebook page that we've made for this channel, or head over to Coffee Breaks, which is a discussion portal that we have as part of your portal as you sign in. All of the links will be posted in the chat, even though it happens so quickly, if you can catch them. Yes, exactly. Thank you, Kat and Gabby here helping. And then I'll just close the session with one last question for you, Betty. And it is your one top tip to stay embodied.
Notice, well, at the moment, I'm noticing the sensation of my butt because I've been sitting a while. So I would say, give your attention to your sensation. Where do you feel pressure? Where do you feel heat? Where do you feel the desire to move? Where do you feel flushed? Right now, I want to scratch the back of my head because it feels itchy. I think attending to sensation would be it, and breathing.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
I will drop into the Facebook group and answer further questions there.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Betty.
You are so welcome. Thank you for hosting and holding this space. And thank you all who showed up in this little group for letting me see that you're here.
Yeah, it's been our privilege and it's such an honor. So we're going to close the session. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you shortly. Mm-hmm.